This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
H21 on the Voice of St. Louis. Good morning, Stuart McMillan in for Scott Jay out today. The Economy Museum at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis is celebrating its 10th anniversary with special economic lessons, tips on how to spot counterfeit money, and a whole lot more. Here's part one of my tour of the museum with Director Abby Anderson.
We opened in 2014. We are the museum inside the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. As you may or may not know, there are 12 districts in the Federal Reserve, and many of them have museums or guided tour programs or galleries. We think that ours is very special because instead of just being a museum of the Federal Reserve or just being a museum about how money flows through the economy, we wanted to focus specifically on the economy and on economic education. The St. Louis Fed is really known for being a leader when it comes to economic education. We have an amazing team here that specializes it with teacher trainings, programs. We have a plethora of online resources that teachers, homeschoolers, and even just families can use to learn a little bit more about how they use their money and how it impacts the economy. When we opened this, we wanted to make sure that we created a space that anyone and everyone could come through our doors, learn about what we do, also, more importantly, how they fit in the economy and how their individual choices, decisions really can benefit not only themselves, but everybody. We are really fortunate, we talked about this a little bit, but this building is almost 100 years old. It's celebrating its 100th anniversary next year, and we wanted to showcase a bit of a mix of the past and the future. So right here, you're actually in what we call our teller's room.
Okay, so when you walk in, it's a beautiful building. Mm-hmm, you know, a Taj Mahal, in a way. I mean, it's really strikingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. Everywhere you look, there's something to look at. But you kind of come through the foyer area, and then you come into this room, and you said it's called the teller's room?
Yeah, it's called the teller's room. So when this building opened for operations in 1925, unlike today, where we have our cell phones, our computers, we have online access, a lot of work had to be done in person. And that's what these rooms were for. A variety of different responsibilities were a part of the Federal Reserve's role. And people could come in here and they could buy and sell treasury securities. Some people even had savings and tax deposits that they would do here. But especially banks and bankers could conduct business to make sure that they have the cash and coin on hand to help their consumers and their customers, and also to engage with the myriad of leaders, economists, and experts here at the Federal Reserve. Now, today, since we are able to do so much more remotely and our responsibilities have changed to really transition to an electronic payment support system, these rooms are now just for display, but we wanted to showcase that transition from the past into the future.
So are these original teller windows?
Yeah, these are absolutely original, and I'm going to point out something kind of cool right over here.
We'll walk together here.
So I do a lot of tours with high schoolers, and I love to ask, what's a teller's room? And shockingly, or maybe not shockingly, they have no idea because so much has happened online. But again, we had these teller windows where business could be conducted. expected. But large transfers of cash and coin would happen. And as you can imagine, trying to heave it over a window would be quite challenging. So right here, these were actually slots that would open up and transfers could be made.
Large. How much money's in there?
Oh.
I bet there's a pirate's chest
of money
sitting in there you forgot about or something.
You're trying to get all of my best secrets, right? Of course, we have sealed this up for safety. But that just gives you an idea of kind of that person-to-person interaction that would happen. Over the years, we've lost some of that, and that's what the museum is here for, is to reconnect with the general public, to be the face of the institution, and hopefully introduce them into the concept of economics and get them excited about it.
That's fascinating. Well, let's go into the the main thoroughfare here of the museum. So they come out of the past into the future.
Yeah, so in this first room, in this original gallery, this really is to talk about some of the key pillars of the study of economics. There are things, no matter who you are, where you live, when it comes to the economy, are a part of it. A big one is scarcity. Scarcity drives a lot of things. There's only so much of everything in the entire world. I had an economist joke with me one time that everything is scarce, even your mother's love.
And when economists joke, do we all laugh right away, or do we like think about it and go home and tell our parents and talk to our wife solemnly? Or do we laugh?
We can laugh.
Okay,
we can laugh. But all of that helps drive our economy, just like decision making.
Let's go over to decision making. Mm-hmm. So scarcity, having to decide things.
Right, decisions is the hardest thing, right? We make decisions every single day, and it's not always just money decisions. Right now, you are deciding to spend your time with me in the Economy Museum, right? You could be doing anything else in the entire city.
Anything in the world.
Anything in the world.
But I'm here. Here we are.
Which I think was a great decision, personally.
Not a bad one. Not a bad one. Let's see if it pays off. No, no pun intended.
But you make decisions on how you invest in your human capital. So your human capital is how you invest in your education and your skills. And it could be education and skills for a job. It could be education and skills for personal enjoyment. I like to knit, for example. And so I may choose to build my human capital, become a better knitter, and hopefully finally make my own sweater.
Where are you at on that?
You know what? I'm starting on another hat, so we'll see.
Put the sweater aside.
Put the sweater
aside. Maybe you can have a hat by Christmas or something,
right,
and
exactly.
Be warm. At least your head's warm.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. So what other factors do we need to think about in decision-making?
Sure. When you think about your credit or your credit score, your credit history, you make decisions on how to do that. For some, they may decide not to have a credit card at all, which could mean that there's no credit card debt, but it could impact your credit score and your credit history because there's not a showcase of how you can be responsible and manage your money. You could decide that you want to go to a thrift store and get a couch because it's a little bit cheaper.
Now you're in my world now.
Or you could decide to buy a brand new one because you know it's going to last a little bit longer. All of those decisions can impact the usability, your comfort, your lifestyle, and certainly your budget.
Okay, yeah. Where do we go now?
All right, well, as we continue on, another big concept is the idea of trade and bartering. So I'm going to ask you, do you know the difference between trading and bartering?
I guess trading would be like one-to-one, and then bartering would be like kind of finagling for something. That's a terrible way to put that.
I think that's a technical term. We'll have to check with Eric.
Finagle,
right?
Yeah. They'll probably laugh at that too, don't worry.
Well, the idea is that trade is that you are getting goods and services using a means of exchange like money. Where bartering is you're getting goods and services by trading goods and services.
So and that is your money.
Mm-hmm.
What you're bartering.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So to go back to my hat, maybe I'll trade that hat for a friend of mine making homemade jam, for example. But we have to decide, is my hat as good? I think it will be, but is my hat as good as the jam? And that's where it gets a little fuzzy, right?
Yeah. I hope so. It's a hat.
It is fuzzy. Hopefully not the jam, though.
The jam should not be. If it's fuzzy, well, that is a point, though. The jam goes old and becomes bad, and the hat should last way longer than jam.
Absolutely. And us as humans, we've been trying for millennia to figure out a way to do that effectively, fairly, and efficiently.
Economy Museum at Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, open weekdays 9 to 3. Admission is free. More information on the museum website and at 9:20 when we continue the tour. On Total Information AM. The Economy Museum at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis celebrating its 10th anniversary next year. The bank will be 100 years old since operating since 2014. They've added some space there. Let's go to Museum Director Abby Anderson with the rest of our tour that I took there just a couple of weeks ago.
Over the pandemic, we worked and constructed and decided that we needed to showcase something that everyone is concerned about, and that is, of course, money. Oh. So we're going to be walking into what we call
the vault.
Now, the vault is really centered on that means of exchange. So money, money, money all around. And in this area, you can learn a little bit more about what the Federal Reserve does with the bills. One of the services that we provide is to make sure that the money in your pocket isn't pretty fresh and isn't falling apart. So go ahead if you want to measure yourself up in money.
Okay, so there's a measuring element of sorts here. I'm trying to describe this on the radio, and it's filled with little crumbly bits of, I'm guessing this is money.
It is money.
That's been chopped up. This is sad. This is a sad day to see all this chopped up money right here, but this money could not be used, right? It was not.
Exactly.
It had to be destroyed in this way.
Yep, everything, you know, I'm inching towards 40. Everything gets a little bit older, a little bit creakier, and that includes our money. And so eventually, your money will get worn, torn, dirty. Someone might be creative and draw a mustache on one of the figures. And what we do here at the Federal Reserve is you want to make sure that the currency that's floating around is reliable for each individual. And so what we will do is we have these machines, they're called high-powered processing machines, that analyze all the bills, they'll verify them, and then they'll determine if what they are what we call unfit for circulation.
Unfit.
Yeah. One thing to think about is when banks do make deposits, if we do shred money because it's worn, torn, or dirty, it's not as though they lose that money. So the same way that you go to a bank, you deposit money, they're not holding on to that very specific $20 bill for you, but you have $20 on your account. So banks will still have that money in their account.
How much money do they destroy every year, do you think, or exchange, I guess?
Well, it could be $3 to $4 million are destroyed every single day, just depending on the day.
Every day?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yep, it just depends. It can vary wildly.
You could probably fill that whole room with it.
Right? Scrooge McDuck style.
Yeah. Hey, new playpen for the kids here. Maybe at the 11th year anniversary,
right.
You can bring in the Scrooge McDuck room where they jump into the confetti pile.
So, yeah. So that's what we do with the currency, and then a lot of it is composted. So the cheesy joke is that money doesn't grow on trees, but money can grow trees. Our machines will also verify as if the bills are real, so counterfeits. And we do have a station here that we call our cash lab, which we encourage people to recognize the various design features that are on U.S. currency to help protect you from counterfeiting. Unfortunately, counterfeiting is still an issue, and especially younger kids can be targeted. I've heard stories of Boy and Girl Scouts being given counterfeit bills to buy those cookies and popcorn.
Oh.
So we want to make sure everyone's safe and prepared.
That's not locally, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Come on, St. Louis.
I know, right?
Don't be giving them counterfeit money to the kids.
Right?
I mean, that's terrible. I did hear about recently there was some counterfeit money passed at the Lake of the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
For a meal, and it was like movie money.
Yep.
Movie money, but it looks very real. Mm-hmm. How do you tell the difference?
Well, one of the very, very best ways to tell if your money is real or fake is to feel it. So money is made of linen and cotton. It's not paper, even though we call it paper currency. And it should have a little bit of a rough texture to it. It shouldn't feel like copier paper. It shouldn't feel like construction paper. Just get really familiar with how it feels. Our staff downstairs in our cash vault who help work with money every single day, that's their number one thing that they do is they feel the money.
They just feel money for a living?
They have a lot of very important responsibilities, but they're highly trained to be able to recognize counterfeits.
That is incredible. What a job. I mean, what a job. Wow. How would you like to just feel money? Do you feel money daily just for fun?
Of course. It's my hobby, knitting and feeling money.
Okay, so feel is a part of it. And there's some things inside of it. There's like little lines and things. We have some examples
absolutely.
Here, don't we? How do you spot a counterfeit? Okay, so there's a few
options.
Okay.
There's a couple of ways. One is you look for what we call the watermark. So if you look right here,
there's Ben.
You recognize? Yeah. Okay. Good.
Ben
you
Franklin.
Know who that is.
That's a $100 bill, folks.
Yeah.
For those that don't see those very often.
So basically, all bills will have what's called a watermark on it. It's a hidden picture for the $100. $100 bill. It's a replica portrait of Benjamin Franklin that's on the right side of the bill. You can hold that up to the light. It could be a general light in your room. It could be the sun, and you should see that image there. Mm-hmm. There have been stories of individuals stripping maybe lower bills, like a $5 bill, and then reprinting it to look like $100, so it'd have that feel, right? But the watermark isn't easily removed. So for the $5 bill, it's just the number 5. So if you held this up to the light and saw a big number 5, you would know that there's a problem there.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. And when did the strip come in to play there? Because yeah. that's relatively new, is it not?
Yeah, so this is a holographic strip. I want to say it's about 20 years old now, but money is generally...
What is time, really?
I mean... Time is relative. But money is generally redesigned about every 5 to 7 years. They add in new features, new details, new elements. Also, bills have what we call a security thread.
Okay. Really, so you just hit a button and a blue light kind of came up. Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah, okay. So there's some black light. So you want to look.
Or black light, yeah.
There's a security thread.
Oh, I see it.
That you'll see here, but yep. You don't see it over here. That's an embedded piece of plastic that's in there. And so all bills, $5 and larger, will have that element there. Hmm. Now, certainly you got to have the right black light for it, but it's another extra way just to make sure that your bills are real.
And how about the pin? I've seen some use a pin where they swipe it.
Yeah.
Does that work?
It works for some bills. We recommend, you know, the best thing to do is look and feel individually. Another really great one is, you see this 100 right here?
Yeah.
In the Liberty Bell?
I do.
So there's color shifting ink. So what happens is as you tilt it, it will change color from kind of a coppery gold to a green.
Right. Okay.
And I've seen counterfeits where they just took a gold Sharpie and they highlighted that area so it'd be shiny.
I see.
But obviously it's not going to transition those colors. So that's another big way for you to be able to tell if your bills are counterfeit.
Wow, that's fascinating. When does all this go away and we just use our credit cards and we don't even use paper?
Sure. From what I've been told from our cash office, there hasn't been a huge downtick of the types of withdrawals and deposits that they're getting. So people are still using cash. And it's still the most popular way to pay for anything under $10. And there's even businesses that are transitioning to cash only because they are trying to budget with the various fees that come along with credit card services. So I think cash is really important. It's also really valuable during times of crisis. So if there's a weather event that puts out the power, knocks out data, having cash and currency on hand makes it easier for you to continue to grow and keep your economy moving.
Cash is king. And it's still king.
Right.
Should remain that way?
Well, you know, I can't look into a crystal ball and predict, but I think it'll be a while before cash goes away.
Okay, well, that's good news. I like cash. I don't want it to go anywhere. But I hear there's something really heavy I have to pick up.
There is something really heavy. Did you do your workout today?
No. But I knew this was coming, and I should have done more to prepare. Tell me what I'm standing in front of right now.
Yeah, so we're really fortunate that we have on display on loan from the U.S. Mint a 28-pound genuine gold bar. Interesting fact, so gold is a dense metal, so it's heavier than it looks. And we encourage folks to lift it and see if they can pick it up. So
all right, let's give it a try.
Wow. That is incredibly heavy. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, thanks so much for the tour. I appreciate it. Hashtag Economy Museum.
Yeah. Check us out on Instagram. We also have a YouTube channel. We have virtual tours if you're not able to come indoors. But a big thing to remember is that we are completely free. Our tours, admission, anyone can come in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
And you get money at the end.
You get money at the end.
I mean, it's destroyed.
It's still fun,
but it's awesome. All right. Thank you so much.